Welcome to the Lusuma Podcast. I'm Charles Lusuma. I was thinking about the discussion that I had with you guys on Facebook, the Facebook workshop page. It was the discussion right after I posted my part three of the Capture One review. The one that I think this would be two podcasts ago from this one. I talked about how, you know, on the podcast, I talked about how there were good things, there were bad things. My general gist was, it's okay. It's a tool I'll probably buy because the cost isn't terrible for, you know, and it does a few things differently than what I get from Lightroom. In the discussion on the Facebook workshop page, I really opened up and then got critical about, I think, really more my sentiments towards kind of retouching in general and how maybe perhaps how some of you guys approach it and how that really differs from my I guess ideals, because I went on a diatribe and really said, look, there are some things that I think it does terribly, you know, file system stuff. I think it overdoes everything, you know, whether it's sharpening, moire, reduction, noise reduction, even the HDR tool is really over the top. And even with the skin tones, it's like, yeah, do the skin tones approach or get closer to what I think they should be in real life? Yes, but then are they also oversaturated and a little bit too poppy? Yes, as well. So, I don't know. I mean, there's the general sense that I'm usually a contrarian anyway. So if y'all like it and use it, I'm likely to just disagree just for the sake of disagreeing. But it really forced me also to then think about, well, then what is my philosophy of and about retouching? And what do I want the software to do then? If it doesn't do what I want it to do, what is it that I wanted out of it? And that's a great little exercise to really focus your efforts on kind of figuring out. By answering that question, I think you really reveal who it is that you are and what it is that you are trying to achieve. So what do I want my retouching software to do, regardless of whether it's Capture One or Lightroom? And I suppose right now we're talking about Capture One versus Lightroom, of course, because that's kind of the topic of conversation. But in general, what do I want all of my retouching software to do? First and foremost, I want it to get the hell out of my way. And that is not limited to retouching. That's also, that has to do, and that is my philosophies for Capture as well, not just post-processing. It is, actually, if I ask myself that same question, I think it has to do with my entire life. I want to remove the friction, inefficiencies, whatever stumbling blocks that are out there, challenges, whatever it is that is preventing me from getting to my final product, I want that stuff to be gone. In specifically, as I'm talking about, say, retouching software, right? What I'm trying to do is create a specific look. Whatever that look is, I've got these tools, whether it's Photoshop, Lightroom, Capture One. What I want these tools to do is to allow me to generate the final product seamlessly. That being said, each of these programs have specific tools, whether it's a color wheel or it's curves or levels, or whether it's raw processing sliders, you know, each one has a set of tools that are, you know, create a certain look, but then are also limited to what they can and cannot do. And of course, I am bound by these constraints to create that vision that I have in my head. So in a perfect world, what I really want is, again, I would want, I think I called it, Light Capture Shop, you know, which is basically some compilation of Lightroom, Capture One, and Photoshop. This is well within the realm of possibilities because all you really need is the API for all three programs, which we don't have, I don't believe. But assuming we had that, we could have that. Or, you know, if someone wanted to create some sort of compilation of all three programs, then I would have access to all the tools that I love from each of these programs and have the best of the... I want my cake and eat it too. I want the file system management of Lightroom with the raw processing of Capture One. And then I want to pick and choose kind of like the sliders and the tools that I have from each. And then I want to be able to Photoshop all of that within the same program and not have to save stuff back and forth and go between programs and then be locked out of certain tools after I move one. Like if I move the picture from Lightroom to Photoshop and I can't go back to Lightroom until I save it again, and then it'll be different because it'll be a TIFF file instead of a RAW file. And then I can't, like, as it is right now, it's very linear. I go back and forth between programs. What I really want is something that just allows me to edit non-linearly, more circularly, as I've mentioned before, kind of just let me jump between my tools of choice at any given time on a whim. So philosophically, that's what I want. And, you know, technologically, if we can advance, if we get to the, and, you know, in not even being limited to Photoshop, Lightroom, and Capture One, maybe there's one day where we can relight a whole scene realistically, right? Say, okay, here's where the light's coming in. It's got a one light look. I really wanted this to come in from 60 degrees on the left or right. And then the program would figure that out, you know, rotate the light 60 degrees. You know, now I have a totally different lighting. I think that's probably within the possibility, given how advanced Adobe is and at doing certain things like content-aware fill, and then, you know, taking things out, spot healing, and just, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing what Photoshop is capable of, and it wouldn't surprise me if one day they allowed you to relight, refocus, even like, let's say your depth. Well, actually, that's not possible. We'll get into that in a second. Refocusing is impossible because, you know, if you're given a two-dimensional image, the software has no idea what something that is out of focus looks like, unless, of course, you capture all the different focusing, all the different depths of fields, or all the different focusing points from front to back. Like, let's say we were talking about the phase one cameras can do, you know, with brackets or with, you know, multiple exposures. Or if you have a camera like the, there's that one company that does it where it'll allow you to kind of adjust focus and post. Anyway, those things are around the horizon, but, you know, like things such as moving the light, like relighting, that hasn't, I think I've done that manually a few times where the light was a little bit off and I try to fill in shadows, or I try to move the shadows around a little bit, or sometimes I'll edit, like, you know, when I'm doing liquefying and I'm finding that the liquefy tool is good and it's allowing me to approach what, you know, ideal that I want, but at the same time I'm also limited by the shadows and the highlights that are also shaping the nose or the body or wherever it is that I'm trying to kind of reshape. Relighting is really important. Relighting is going to get me to the final shape and look that I want. You know, where it's not just liquefying, where it's not just, you know, an exposure change. But anyway, those are things that I want that kind of on my wish list that don't exist yet. Point being that what I'm trying, I have a vision in my head. Sometimes there are things that I can achieve with the tools that I have, but sometimes they're not possible because we don't have those tools, or it becomes really, really challenging. For example, like one of the things I've always wanted to do that I Googled to death and never found because it doesn't exist was like when stray hairs go against the grain. So let's say you have like a girl's hair is going downwards, but then you've got like these random strays that are crisscrossing. They're going the wrong way. I always thought it'd be pretty simple for Photoshop to figure out, hey, there are like 7 hairs that are going opposite direction. Can you just like remove those and give me the pattern that would otherwise be there underneath the hair, which is pretty obvious given how, you know, you've got a lot to sample from. And yeah, sometimes the healing brush works, but never to the extent where I think it should work. You know, it doesn't work as well as I think it ought to work. And which always kind of bugged me, because I thought that was kind of a more low-hanging fruit type of deal where that really should be easy, but isn't available just yet. So again, get out of my way to let me do the things that I want to do seamlessly, right? That being said, of course, there are some benefits, amazing benefits from having tools that have limitations, because they force you to think differently. Just like, you know, one of the benefits of actually using Instagram is it forces me to think in the square aspect ratio. And sometimes it forces me to use, you know, have to invent clever ways to combine two pictures together, you know, which then become 2-to-1 aspect ratio. When you put them together, it become 1-to-1. And then kind of like blending them together however I want, you know. So with the limitations of tools comes also clever ways, hopefully, that you can come up with to make these tools work and make them work differently, maybe in ways that you had never considered. That's a benefit. It's not really what I'm getting at, but there are good things that happen sometimes when you are forced to use tools that aren't perfect, imperfect tools, right? But yeah, what I want I talked about this earlier, is what I want from, say, cameras, you know, at the point of capture, you know, and so I'm talking outside of the retouching tools, the post-processing software that we have. No, I want the camera to get out of my way. I want it to be able to give me what I want in the capture, at the point of capture, seamlessly. So for example, one of the things that I really dislike about the Sony a7R Mark II is that it's got a terribly small camera buffer or memory buffer for the file sizes, which is to say, I think I take like 10-15 pictures and then I'm waiting 1 second per click, or even longer. Sometimes I can't even release the shutter because it's just clogged, congested. And I've got to say, hang on a second, just pause, give me like 30 seconds to clear out the memory buffer. But during which I'm kind of icing the model, making it awkward, ruining the flow. That's something that I've always wanted out of my camera, was to have a large enough memory buffer that I wouldn't have to ever slow down. Slowing down seems like something that is just so inhibitive and so disastrous when you're moving and you're letting your model flow with her, you know, poses. You know, it's the opposite of being dynamic, right? If you're shooting in a studio and you're tethered and you're wanting her to do exactly what you see in your head, then that'll never be a problem. But that's not how I shoot. So stylistically for me, I'm very dynamic and I really need a camera that allows me to let go, to release, to go when I say go, and to stop not because it has physical limitations, but only when I, you know, run out of the desire to keep clicking the shutter. Another example of a capture type limitation is, of course, lighting and dynamic range, which is understandable given the limitations of sensors these days, right? You know, I'm thinking back to my D3 wish list. When I got my Nikon D3 back in 2008, 2009, my wish list was a larger memory buffer, more dynamic range, and I think I wanted it to focus better. I don't know. It was either focus better or I don't know if like 3 and 4 were kind of like really not that important, because the Nikon D3 was amazingly good at focusing. So it was higher ISO, like less noise. So yeah, number one, bigger memory buffer. Number two, more dynamic range. Number three, higher ISO performance or better low light performance. Number four, five, you know, better focus system. And maybe more megapixels. And at the time I was shooting the Nikon D3, it was a 12, it's a 12 megapixel camera. You know, I never needed or wanted for more megapixels, even though that's kind of the direction that Nikon and Canon went, or Nikon specifically. Canon followed, and then of course now Canon has that ridiculous 50 megapixel camera, which, you know, and with the Sony A7 R Mark II, really with 42 megapixels, we're at the top end of these things where I don't have any need for it. I needed to get out of my way. I needed to do the things that I wanted to do seamlessly so that I can stay within the moment and shoot the way that I want to shoot. So I think it comes down to the philosophy, the style that you shoot, the philosophy, the style that you edit, which govern and dictate, of course, how you are going to use these tools, which tools you choose, right? So if you're, or if I'm a wedding photographer who doesn't expect to go into Photoshop to do any heavy lifting, then of course I'm going to want something that approaches the final product, maybe approaches the capture skin tones a little bit more accurately, but hopefully not at the expense of workflow and getting the pictures back out to the client, right? So if I'm a wedding photographer, ideally, really, I want to be able to approach the original capture, you know, in the files, and then slap on some filter, export quickly, and then archive the files seamlessly. But I'm not. I'm not a wedding photographer. What I want is to be able to generate the look that I want. I want to be able to play around with shadows, highlights, clarity, you know, coloring, color grading, a lot of color grading. And, you know, I mean, yes, archiving and file management is important, but like getting these out to the client in Dropbox in a small file size really seamlessly is not, you know, is not high on my priority list, even though both products, whether it's Capture One or Lightroom, I'm giving Capture One the benefit of the doubt because I don't use those features on there at all, but I'm just giving it the benefit of the doubt that it's as good as Lightroom to do, you know, in doing so. But again, my demands and my needs for Lightroom are very, very, rather Capture One are very different from the general wedding photographer's requirements. So I wanted to put that out there because I think, again, depending on where you're coming from and what you want out of your products, you know, depending on your style of shooting. For example, like Robert, I know Robert shoots in studio pretty much most of the time, and he probably won't ever need a camera with a memory buffer as large as the one that I want. Those are just different constraints given the style of shooting that we do. He loves to shoot tethered because he likes being tied to a computer in a studio. I can't imagine shooting tethered, whether in studio or on location, unless I'm absolutely forced to. It's just a different cup of tea because of the different stylistic, you know, things that we're doing. Doesn't mean one's better or one's worse. It's just how we're using our tools quite differently. You know, I think we are in many ways on the opposite ends of the spectrum with how we are using the same exact tools. So I think maybe when it comes down to how you approach these things, how do you look for or create the optimized workflow, it really just comes down to prioritizing what you want and then thinking about what you're willing to sacrifice or not. I mean, one of the conundrums of using the A7R Mark II is I gave up a fairly good memory buffer advantage. It is quite a bit more prohibitive in that specific field, that thing that I need. And it's quite remarkable that I was willing to give that up. Willing is not necessarily the right word, because I think it kind of, you know, was unwilling or inadvertent deal. And not to say I didn't know that that was going to happen. I just didn't think that that was going to be, or the two were going to be that different. Although I think I had some metrics, though. I did have some data points, and I had looked at it previously. I just didn't think that I would be that upset over it. I think that's really what it comes down to, is I didn't think that I would be hitting the memory buffer so often, so hard, and that it would be such a big difference between the two cameras. Namely, I'm talking about my original A7 Mark II versus the A7 R Mark II. So yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if maybe the A7S Mark II is the better camera for me, because I surely don't need the megapixels. And I would much rather have a smaller file size, cleaner megapixels, and the lower light advantage. And plus, of course, all of the things that the A7S Mark II does with video. I'm assuming it does the same things with face recognition and face focus. So anyway, comes down to philosophy, comes down to what you use it for, comes down to how you use it, and then let those things dictate how you want or what you want out of your tools. So if you guys, again, have any questions, have any comments, feel free to leave them for me via email, Facebook, Instagram, wherever else you can find me. And thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you guys all soon. Peace.